This is Toledo Symphony Lab, a behind-the-scenes look at the world of classical music from WGTE Public Media and your Toledo Symphony. I'm Brad Cresswell. Joining me today in the studio is the Toledo Symphony's principal second violin and artistic administrator, Merwin Sue. And we also have a special guest joining us by phone. That is Jocelyn Langworthy, who is a clarinetist in the Toledo Symphony. Welcome, Jocelyn.
Hi, Brad. It's great to be here.
This is your first time, so you're a Toledo Symphony Lab newbie. So, welcome to the program. We're glad that you made time for us today.
Well, sure. Happy to do it.
Now, we are here to talk about a chamber concert that's happening this week, and it's going to be at the Paris Style. This is music of Olivier Messiaen, one of his best-known works, The Quartet for the End of Time. And there are many things that I want to talk about in regards to this particular piece. But before we do that, Jocelyn, since you are a newbie to Toledo Symphony Lab, we want to get to know you a little bit. So I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit of Jocelyn's story. I've got some music for you. Let me see if I can pull that up for you.
Okay.
Okay. Jocelyn, take it away. Let's hear your life story. 30 okay. seconds or less.
Sure. Well, I joined the Toledo Symphony as second clarinet in 2000. And before that, I played principal clarinet in the Cedar Rapids Symphony in Iowa. I grew up in Vermilion, South Dakota. I went to school for clarinet performance at the University of Minnesota and then at the University of Southern California. Let's see. After I moved to Toledo, I met my now husband, who is the principal clarinetist of the Toledo Symphony, George Kloss, and we have twin daughters who are 12 years old.
How did you get started on the clarinet? Because I played the clarinet when I was young.
You played the clarinet?
I did.
No,
I was a clarinetist. I started out, I wanted to be a flutist. And...
Oh, that explains it. Because I was going to say, I've always loved clarinet players, but then I've just found out you played the clarinet.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. But
what
then,
are you going to do?
Now what am I going to do?
You have to change your worldview, Merwin.
Absolutely.
But we have you outnumbered because you're a violinist, and Jocelyn's a clarinetist, well, and I was a clarinetist.
But wait.
Well, I will point out that I was a violinist, too.
Oh,
so that was
no.
my first
okay.
instrument. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, how did you go from violin to the clarinet, then?
I guess I started violin when I was really young, like 4 years old, and then I started playing piano when I was about six, and then in fifth grade, you could pick a band instrument, and clarinet, which is obviously the best band instrument, called out to me, and so I chose clarinet, and the thing that made clarinet really different from violin and piano is that I had lessons on violin and piano, and I had to practice a certain amount each day, and my mom would make sure that I always practiced those instruments. And when I joined the band, you got lessons in school that didn't cost anything, and so it was sort of up to me how much I practiced or not, and so that made clarinet the really fun instrument.
Ah. So your house is full of fun with two clarinetists there, right? Do your daughters play clarinet?
They do not play clarinet.
Okay.
Our daughter Freya plays violin, and our daughter Elsa plays piano and cello, but they each both did join the band in their school. So Elsa plays saxophone, and Freya plays trumpet.
Oh, okay. Anyway, Jocelyn, thank you for your story.
Yay!
now that we know you so well, we know all about you and your clarinet adventures. We have another clarinet adventure to talk about, along with a few other instruments here. This is the Quartet for the End of Time. I should mention the concert is happening this Sunday. It's November 1st at 7 o'clock p.m. It's at the Paris Style. Folks can stream this. You can find more information at the website, toledosymphony.com. After the concert is finished, a few days after that, it'll be streaming on demand. You can find that at stream.artstoledo.com. The Quartet for the End of Time, there are two stories associated with this piece, I would say. The first, of course, is the circumstances under which it was written. And the second is sort of the apocalyptic story of the quartet itself. So let's talk about Messiaen and the circumstances under which this piece was actually created. It's a very unique and compelling and heart-rending story, and certainly a story of the triumph of music over adversity and horrible circumstances. Merwin or Jocelyn, which one of you wants to take the lead on this?
Well, Jocelyn, why don't you start and then I can kind of fill in afterwards.
Okay.
Okay. Messiaen wrote this piece while he was in a prisoner of war camp in Görlitz, I believe it is, during World War II. So he managed to write this music while he was a prisoner, and then in January of 1941 actually gave the premiere performance of this piece with other musicians who were also prisoners in the camp in one of the barracks there. So it's a pretty incredible way that that came to be composed.
Well, there are four instruments, the piano, which Messiaen played himself at the premiere. They had an old upright piano, the violin, the cello, and the clarinet. I guess they didn't have a cello. They had to take up a collection to buy a cello. Obviously, they didn't have great instruments at their disposal, but they had a huge crowd of prisoners and guards who attended that first performance. And I read somewhere a quote from Messiaen saying something like, you know, this was the most rapt and attentive audience I've ever had for music. Merwin, you have something you want to say?
Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting how I'm always fascinated by kind of the little incidents or the little coincidences that kind of make great pieces of music happen. And the guard who was assigned to Messiaen's barracks actually recognized him. Mm. And to think even at that time period that like somebody would recognize a classical composer in like the early 1940s and be so moved as to somewhat put his own career on the line a little bit to allow Messiaen that space to compose, to actually go out of his way to try to find him paper and more importantly to find him solitude. I think if you imagine one of those prisoner of war camps, the idea of actually having time to oneself and to be able to formulate these incredible musical thoughts, that's stunning to me. And I think that just, you know, if he had been assigned one barrack over, you know, like that this piece would never have come to be. It's just stunning to me.
Right. Let's talk about the music itself and the story it tells. It was inspired by the Book of Revelation, which is where the title comes from, the Quartet for the End of Time. There's an angel that announces the end of time in the piece. There are eight different movements here. And it begins with you, Jocelyn, with a clarinet, right? And you're doing a little bird song in there already. People may know that Messiaen was very interested in birds and bird song, and we'll talk more about that. But let's talk about some of the movements here. Maybe, Jocelyn, we should ask you about the third movement, which is just all you, right? The clarinet solo.
Yeah. That's one of the things that's so interesting about this piece is how Messiaen uses different combinations of instruments for the different movements. And really, I think there are only two or three movements where everyone's playing at the same time. It's either duets or in the case of the clarinet in the third movement, just a solo. And that really adds to all the different colors that he creates in this piece. There are just so many fascinating levels of thinking about this piece and understanding this piece. It's just, it's got everything. It's got something for everybody in it. So, so The Abyss of the Birds is the title of the third movement for solo clarinet. And actually, this is the first music that Messiaen wrote for this piece, because he encountered the clarinetist Henri Acocca first of these musicians, and somehow Henri Acocca managed to keep his clarinet with him as he was captured as a prisoner of war. And so that was the instrument available for Messiaen to write for. So this movement has two parts to it. It's got the abyss and it's got the birds. Messiaen writes that time is the abyss. So it's this very dark place, sort of sorrowful music. And really, this is one of the places where you can see one way of ending time musically. It's such a slow tempo without any sort of regular meter to it. So there's a sense in the abyss of this timeless quality. You don't know where you are. It doesn't have a regular pulse. And then the middle section of the movement is the birds. And Messiaen really, as a bird lover, he tried to depict actual bird song in this music instead of just the effect of birds. So he writes for these very joyful sounding birds. He writes that it should sound sunny. So the birds are the opposite of the abyss, and they're the light and the hope in this movement, and also throughout the piece.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about how Messiaen uses the colors of the clarinet. I mean, we know what a clarinet sounds like, but your low register can sound very different from your upper register. I'm assuming it does a lot of low stuff for the abyss and a lot of high stuff for the birds. Is that how it works?
Well, a little bit, kind of. The abyss sort of is in two different registers, but one thing he does in this movement that the clarinet does really well is he has the clarinetist hold notes starting from their softest possible dynamic up to the loudest possible dynamic, and the clarinet really does have a wide dynamic range, and it's a powerful effect that he uses several times in this particular movement.
Yeah. Now, let's switch our focus to the violin, Merwin. There are a couple of pieces in here that deal with the immortality of Jesus and also with the eternity of Jesus. Mm-hmm. One of them is for cello and piano. It's a really well-known excerpt. And the piece ends with violin and piano praising the immortality of Jesus. What is the difference between how Messiaen uses the violin to depict this story as opposed to what Jocelyn has just been talking about? Because it seems like she's doing a lot of real-world imitation in the bird song, but yours is a little more ethereal, I would say.
I think that's very much the effect of it. It's one of those things where it's the piece that I've played where the kind of the plane of execution, when you're trying all of the things that you're worrying about, and that the plane of what the music means kind of separate, and you're starting to play it, and part of your, it's such a difficult piece to play. I don't think that this final movement is ever possible to play perfectly. It's such an incredibly difficult high register, and to sustain notes to the level that Messiaen is writing for, it's for me at least, it verges on the impossible. But you sense that yearning, that kind of search for a goal, and then in a way, I find this movement incredibly liberating because you know that it could never have been perfect given the circumstances of the piece's premiere. Mm. You can see that in a way it's like this ideal of a movement. And so as I play it, I kind of try to leave the difficulty of the execution of the movement as far behind as I can and just kind of go towards the light, as it were, yeah. A little bit. The piece is different from the Abyss of the Birds in that there is this constant heartbeat in the piano.
Right.
And I think that that sense of heartbeat makes the piece feel extremely human, whereas in a way the Abyss of the Birds is, I mean, and I this is going to sound really ridiculous, but it's almost superhuman. It's like, it's a piece that, you know, it's dealing with such like ideas of eternity and the birds. It's something almost superhuman. But I think that the last movement of this is extraordinarily human. You hear this heartbeat all the way through. And I think there is this reminder that as we ponder and give praise to the immortality and the eternity of Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ was also human.
Yeah.
And I think that that heartbeat reminds us constantly of that humanity.
Well, and that also brings up the difference between that last movement, the immortality of mm-hmm. Jesus that you play mm-hmm. with the human heartbeat, and then the earlier version with the cello, which is a little more abstract, mm-hmm. talking about the eternity of Jesus. I've read that the word Jesus is used and intended in different ways for both of those movements. The movement with the cello, which mm-hmm. comes before yours,
yes.
Being about the word Jesus, you
right,
know, the
right.
word, and your movement being about the word made flesh.
Yes.
Right? And so there's a lot of kind of mysticism wrapped up in all of that.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that's stunning to me about this piece is how Messiaen's Catholicism mm-hmm. somehow kind of, it transcends faith boundaries. I'm not Catholic myself, and I've deeply loved studying elements of Catholicism, and of all of the artistic works surrounding Catholicism, this piece speaks to me more deeply than any other one. It's just somehow it feels like it's able to go above and beyond the idea of a particular religion, and it feels so universal, even though Messiaen himself was a very devout Catholic and was he felt that religion permeated every note he wrote.
Oh, I totally agree, Merwin. This piece is absolutely transcendent, and no matter what your personal beliefs may be, it just gives a sense of connection to each other and mm-hmm. to something more, something higher. It's so powerful and moving, and although Messiaen was such a devout Catholic and wrote this as, a biblical piece, a Catholic piece, other musicians who performed the premiere were not, they did not share his religious beliefs. They were each having their own sort of religious beliefs, but they all could share in the power of this and how it transcends those kind of differences and really can bring people together, I think.
We're talking about Olivier Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time. It's being performed by members of the Toledo Symphony this Sunday, November 1st, at 7 p.m. It's happening at the Peristyle. More information about this concert, which will be live streamed at ToledoSymphony.com. I'm talking with Merwin Sue, the violinist, also with Jocelyn Langworthy, the clarinetist. Who else is playing with you? Who are the cellist and the pianist?
Well, we'll be joined by Michael Boyd and Damon Coleman. Michael will be playing piano and Damon will be playing cello.
Okay, wonderful. Have you performed this work before in any of the chamber concerts?
It's funny, actually. Jocelyn and I were trying to remember this. We've actually, the same four of us, played this work at least 15 years ago, maybe closer to 20 years ago.
Wow.
Jocelyn and I both joined the Toledo Symphony roughly the same time. And so we've kind of, It's been kind of fun to trace of our experiences with the TSO together, and we've kind of experienced all of these things at kind of roughly similar points of our artistic development. So I'm so excited to kind of come back to this piece. Gosh, yeah. 16, 18 years.
It's like your high school reunion.
Totally different. Better, much, right. Hopefully much better than a high school reunion.
Okay. Well, you just have to make sure you're not all wearing the same outfit. Or maybe you are. That's okay. Well, we've touched on this lightly, but Messiaen was very much involved in bird song and using birds, imitating birds and instruments throughout his entire compositional output. You know, he wrote some music that was explicitly imitating birds and other pieces of music that obviously evoke the sound of birds. So what I'm getting at is I did formulate a little quiz here, and I would like to do some of this. I don't think I can get all the questions in. But this is a quiz about the use of bird song in classical music. Now, that's a great big, huge, you know, topic, because so many composers have imitated birds or even incorporated birds into their music. So we're going to do just a quick little quiz here and see if we can touch on some of this. Well, before I start the music, let me do the first clue, okay? This should be easy to get. This composer was among the first to use a flute to imitate bird song. We think of the flute now as sort of like, you know, a cliche of what birds sound like. But who was this composer? Was it Couperin? Was it Vivaldi? Or was it von Bieber?
Oh.
Not Justin Bieber. Heinrich von Bieber.
I am totally going to go with von Bieber just because he's one of my favorites. Oh, no.
No, he wrote a violin sonata. See, this is, you're confusing the violin with the flute.
As I do so often.
Yes. He wrote a violin sonata called Cock, Hen, and Quail. So that was his bird contribution. What do you say, Jocelyn?
I'm going to go with Vivaldi.
Whoops, wrong one. Hang on. There we go. See, it wouldn't be right, Jocelyn, unless I accidentally false buzzed you. So, yeah, Vivaldi, his Goldfinch, right?
Isn't it this horrible feeling to hear that buzzer sound, though? It's like your heart drops. It's just, yeah, like my palms are clammy. It's just this horrible thing.
Let's listen to it a little. Now, here's a little bit of the Goldfinch. Okay. So we'll let that music play out during the rest of this. Now, the imitation of this bird's song dates back to medieval times. It's been portrayed by many composers, including Respighi, Saint-Saëns, and Beethoven. And the thing about it is you only need two notes to portray this bird.
Yeah.
What do you say?
The cuckoo. Yay!
Yes, the cuckoo. Boy, Jocelyn, you're cleaning up here. The cuckoo.
Yeah.
This is a question for that, well, I'll say it afterwards, but okay. Usually those two notes are like a descending minor third or descending major third, but there is one composer who used a different interval to portray the cuckoo in one of his symphonies. Do you know who that was? It was in their very first symphony. Instead of a third, they used a descending fourth.
Is this an answer that Zach would be likely to
Yes, get? Exactly.
All right, I'll go with Mahler.
Yay! Oh.
My next clue was it rhymes with Schmaller.
That's a good clue.
Yeah. All right, Jocelyn is 3 for 3. Okay, let's see. I'm going to skip down here a little bit.
You're skipping all the violin ones. I can sense.
Yes, I'm skipping all the violin ones. Okay, which composer was the first to use pre-recorded bird song in their music? Was it Olivier Messiaen? Was it Ottorino Respighi? Or was it Zoltán Kodály?
Well, I know Respighi used it, but I'm not sure if he was first. I'll go with Respighi.
I'm going to say he was first.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give that to Mendelssohn to Merwin.
I like that. That's very flattering. I'll take that.
Merwin Mendelssohn.
I will take the comparison to Mendelssohn.
That'll be your stage name. Better than, yeah. Okay. Only because I was looking at one of the other clues. I guess I'll skip that one now. All right. So, extra credit, though, if you can tell me which Respighi piece actually used pre-recorded birdsong first.
Pines of Rome.
Say, oh, yeah, Pines of Rome. Yeah. All right, so Jocelyn gets extra credit there. All right.
She's going to need it. I'm coming back.
He also... Respighi also wrote, of course, The Birds.
Yeah.
That's the name of one of his pieces, and each of the movements has a different bird associated with it. Which of these is not one of his birds? Is it the dove, the hen, or the sparrow? Which of those is not a Respighi bird?
The sparrow.
Oh. Whoops. That's a yay. I'm going to have to change the board around because I keep hitting the wrong button. Okay, that goes to Merwin. So they were the dove, the hen, the nightingale, and the cuckoo, right? So there's no sparrow.
I think the penguin was his next one. Just didn't get to it.
Yes, the dodo. All right. Jean Sibelius said that the call of which bird was the leitmotif of his life, sort of like the theme song of his life. Was it the swan? Was it the crane? Or was it the yellow-bellied sapsucker?
Aw, what a great name.
What do you say?
It's got to be the swan, right? Oh.
Not the swan.
He wrote one swan.
Yeah, he wrote The Swan of Tuonelo, yeah, which is a well-known piece. But he also wrote another piece with one of the other birds. So you choose between the crane or the yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Is that my guess?
It is.
Go for it.
Okay, yeah, I'll go with the yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Oh. No, it was the crane.
I'm glad that you got to, utter those words on the radio, though, in terms of things that you never thought you would do.
Yeah, exactly. The crane. He wrote the scene with cranes, which is from his Kuolema, which is music he wrote for a play of that title, mm-hmm. right? Okay, let me skip ahead here because we're running short on time. But this concerto for birds begins with the performance direction, Think of Autumn and Tchaikovsky. It's written at the beginning of the score.
Wow.
It's a concerto for birds and orchestra.
Mm.
I have no idea.
It uses pre-recorded bird song along with imitations from the orchestra. It ends with a fade out from the strings and harp accompanied by the sound of swans.
Wow.
It's also
playing.
It's very cold.
Okay, John Luther Adams.
No, that's a good guess, though. You're in the right part of the country.
Okay.
Sort of. Go a little further north.
Armory Schaefer?
No.
No,
no, but I thought of including an Armory Schaefer because I know you have a soft spot for him. No, this is the Cantus Arcticus, the music of Einar Juhani Rautavaara.
Oh.
Yeah, his concerto for birds.
Wow.
An orchestra. Okay, that's a no one. I'm going to throw in
You get a point for that.
Though. I get a point for that.
Yeah, totally
stumped.
But the beginning of the whole piece, he wrote in the score, Think of Autumn and Tchaikovsky.
Nice.
Not quite sure what he means exactly by that, but, you know, it's one of those performance directions.
Well, you've been saving this for like a few months, right? Because it had to be a seasonal question.
Yes. Think of Autumn.
It's like pumpkin spice for Starbucks, this question for Brad Criswell.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to make a call here. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. Jocelyn, I have to give it to you.
Yay!
Excellent job. Jocelyn Langworthy, the winner of our quiz, the winner of today's episode of Toledo Symphony Lab. I want to thank you for joining us by phone today. And also mention again that this concert's happening on Sunday. The Quartet for the End of Time, I mean, we just barely talked about the piece. There's so much to be gleaned from it. But it's a wonderful, fantastic piece of music. I know you guys will certainly do it justice. Folks can stream this at ToledoSymphony.com. You can find the details. The streaming link is stream.artstoledo.com. Again, A live stream will be happening Sunday evening at 7 o'clock p.m. And then a few days after that, it'll be posted for on-demand streaming as well. Is there anything else you want to say about this performance before we go?
It's kind of amazing that, like, there are some times when we're talking about, you know, composers or pieces, and we're just thinking, what can we possibly say? And for a piece like this, it's like we can go for hours.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I think it's such a personal piece, and I think that it brings so much of what you're experiencing and feeling of the moment. I feel like it's going to be a very different performance for me than the previous times I've played it because of, like, you know, where we are in our lives.
So yeah.
I think that's going to be something that's really interesting. It's something that I think you put a lot of yourself into the piece.
Absolutely.
Jocelyn, is there anything you wanted to add?
Well, I feel like the same way you do, that this is a very different experience for me working on this piece than it was years ago. And part of it is just the times we're living in now with a pandemic and so many difficult things going on. And this piece really has relevance and can give meaning and context to the kinds of feelings we're having in these difficult times. So I find it to be a very hopeful piece, and I'm really looking forward to performing it.
This program is a production of WGTE Public Media in collaboration with our sponsor, the Toledo Symphony, with generous support from the Rita Barber Kern Foundation. You can download episodes of this program as a podcast by going to our website at wgte.org/lab. You can also subscribe to us through your podcast app of choice, including Apple and Google Podcasts. My thanks to Merwin Sue and Jocelyn Langworthy for joining us today. I'm Brad Cresswell. You've been listening to Toledo Symphony Lab from FM 91.